Okay, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Oh, welcome to the Breakfast Round Table. I'm just going to share the show. So let me do that with Telegram. I'm not much of a conversationalist this early in the day, but I can host. So if people want to have a conversation, we can do that a little bit. And I think Freedom Warriors coming in, so that's a place to start. Hello, Mr. Freedom Warrior. All right, mate, feel free to call in. I haven't worked out how to invite people yet, which is a bit, oh, there we go.
All right.
All right, man, how are you doing? You're okay?
Yeah, finally I've got some days off again. Just with all the work, you don't get much, you don't feel much about what's happening in the world, and you're too tired to follow everything. So today.
No, I know, man. When I'm working in the call center, I can't do anything in the evening. I just kind of come home and chill out for an hour, and then I just go to sleep, basically.
Ah, so you're working now also?
No, I'm not at the moment, but when I was,
Yeah.
it's difficult to get anything organized. So the weekend, that's why I do my stuff at the weekend mostly.
Yeah, for me, I do in the evening also. I get new hours now. I work from 11 in the morning till 6. So I told them I need time, so I got more time, but I have to do it in the evening. So then I will have some time to, but now I feel there's so much overkill in information. I cannot follow it anymore. So I let a lot pass by and pick out the things that are really urgent. It's just too much.
Yeah, I don't really bother with it all that much. I mean, I dip in and out of it, but because I'm more doing music shows at the moment anyway, so I keep just seeing stuff about Andy Warhol everywhere now that I've started doing Andy Warhol shows.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, that's a cool topic. So that's actually what we should do, but it's the politics that's in the way.
Yeah, I'm just ignoring it all. It looks like we're probably going back into a lockdown up here, where I'm just going to ignore it as much as I can.
Yeah, I'm fearing here probably too. It's not yet announced, but I'm pretty sure come winter it will happen again. So yeah. I wanted to plan actually to get out of the city because it's not going to be nice, and I don't feel like I want to be put in my own house by a government again. Yeah.
Yeah,
But what can you do?
it's just a bit tricky. I tend to avoid most of the city centre anyway, but I was up there at the weekend, and one of the cinema that I use up there is open again. So it's a little bit better than it was. There's at least somewhere to go that's reasonably cheap.
And do you have any requirements to go in
No,
there?
it's table service still, but it's not stressy really. It's just a matter of order your food from the table. I haven't been in the cinema yet, but the cafe next door is open, so I know if they're not requiring masks in there, they won't be requiring masks in the cinema. I wouldn't have thought.
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, it is not a very nice, it's not even a healthy idea to sit there in a cinema.
Oh, you can't be there anyway. Nobody's going to be able to enforce it in the dark anyway, so.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, here now they're starting with from soon they start with bars and all kinds of indoors entertainment that you have to show a vaccination proof or do a test. So, yeah. And where I'm working, it's funny, where I work, I can go to work, but I'm not allowed to come in if I want to have a good time. Or I need to have a vaccination pass, or I have to do a test. And they said they also want me, they cannot enforce it yet, but they would like me to do two tests a week. And I said, well, I don't think I will do that. And as long as it's not forced. And yeah, we highly recommend it. Yeah, sure. But if I have to do a test, I want a saliva test. I'm not going to stick anything up my nose. No.
Yeah, that would be better. That would definitely be better.
But they said also, yeah, but it's more expensive. So, well, in the worst case scenario, I'll buy it myself, but I'm not going to do anything in my nose, nothing. So, yeah. But yeah, it's the same. The pressure is going to be felt soon now. So, yeah. It would be better if you could be out of a city, just far away from all it. But yeah, you have to have your options then.
Yeah, I think I like cities too much, and I don't drive, so I need to have stuff that's around that's walking distance, really.
Yeah, I have the same situation. I also don't drive. That makes it harder. And yeah, the corona took pretty much of my money as well. So it's not so easy to go anywhere. But anyway, was there anything specific you want to discuss this morning? Otherwise, I'm just rambling on a bit.
No, I'm quite happy just to ramble. I don't mind. I mean, I don't. There's not really that much going on that I know of. I didn't get any papers or anything over the weekend, so I don't know what the political things are that are going on. There seems to be a bit of a Boris Johnson backlash going on.
Yeah, it better be. I mean, how much more can the British people take if they're going to be put back in lockdown? It's just going to be crazy.
I don't think,
And it's true.
I don't honestly think people will do it. I mean, the people that are still wearing masks will do it, but I don't think anybody else will.
Yeah, I hope that people will resist this because this is going to be quite urgent. If you, but they seem to be getting away with most of it still. And I mean, but the protests are also getting bigger. That's a good thing, you know. We had one of the biggest here in Amsterdam a week ago, something. And it's not just ordinary people. It's also doctors. It's also scientists. It's ex-policemen or sometimes police people. So that's pretty hopeful.
Oh, so the professionals and the middle class are starting to join in. That makes a difference.
Yeah, and there's because the most cities are still banning the protest, but they've always find a location and they have their own security team coming along. They even have like an own emergency like healthcare people who will can able to supply if something happens. And they're very careful to tell people, okay, don't do this, don't do that. You know, try to avoid police violence if the police is usually starting the violence, but it went all peacefully until the last time, so that's good. And it's going momentum is getting bigger and bigger as the politicians starts to push more. More people will say, "Hey, this is going insane," and of course within families too. And sometimes at work, I hear people say, "Oh yeah, there's a bunch of anti-vaxxers there," and I have to tell them, "Hey, listen, don't do that. You know, don't start to divide yourself. You know, we're just people. Don't let this politics ruin us." And they get this really feeling that they find it funny. Young people, some young people, oh, there's some anti-vaxxers there. Like, you know, it's the same old problem, always this division. And once you start to see through it, I try to when I can, when people are a little bit open, I try to tell them, hey, don't do that. You know, it's not helpful.
No, that's
So.
it. It's a tricky thing because it's if we end up having to use vaccine passports and they're giving out booster shots once a year, it means your vaccine passport's only going to be up to date when you get the booster shot, so.
Yeah. It doesn't matter anymore then, like in Israel where they say, okay, if you don't take this, then your first two shots don't count. It's like, what is this? It's incredible how they can twist and manipulate everything.
It's a total con job, isn't it? Total con job.
Yeah, and the people don't see it. It's just, I mean, I don't want to sound like we are so smart, but it's like, it has to become now quite visible, you know. And
the thing is, it's all based on it's philosophical assumptions that are the issue. People don't get to the point where they're questioning philosophical assumptions, but that's where the issue is. That's where the blind spot is. If you've made assumptions about the world that don't include the government running a big con job on you, then you're never going to see it.
Yeah, you're true.
And at least include that as a possibility to be able to see the con.
Yeah, it's always this not looking at both sides of the story. I don't understand this. I mean, I'm always, even things that I'm pro in, so to speak, which I'm for, if people come and tell me something that's completely opposite, I will still listen and consider it. There might be something there. Let's look into it. But a lot of people, they just assume that all the things that I've learned is just what it is, and they're not willing to look the other side, at the other side of it. And those are intelligent people often, which I meet, to think, how is it possible that you've not even considered this?
It's the filtering process comes from philosophy. So if you're making an assumption about the world being, I'm contradicting myself here because I've probably said something that's completely the opposite of this within the last week. But never mind, I'll carry on anyway. So if you're making an assumption about the world being hostile, you'll see a hostile world. And if you make an assumption about the world being supportive, you'll see a supportive world. But actually, the world's both of those things.
Yeah, sure. Sure. I'm also willing to consider that is not, of course, it's not. I saw an interview with John Cleese once. He said it also perfectly, that it's never completely this or completely that. You know, he was giving the example of the British Empire, like it was never all bad, or, you know, there was also some good. You know, it's never, and it's the same with everything. It's not like the whole government's all bad all the time. I mean, there is, of course, certain good initiatives as well. But, you know, you just have to see both sides, or at least try to find the middle ground and not just be stuck in one side of it.
Yeah, at least from the middle you can respond in whatever's in a way that's appropriate for the situation. If you're only seeing one thing, then you're going to get caught in a situation that you don't have the ability to respond to.
Yeah, and that is I find a bit, lots of people who disagree with me, that's fine, you don't have to agree with me, but at least look at things, you know, let's, maybe I'm wrong, I could be, but then tell me, please, but, you know, that is my miss with a lot of people, these attitudes, and it's completely like, oh, you like this, oh, you like that, hey, you don't even know me, you know, we haven't discussed anything, we haven't looked at anything, and, you know, it's important that we look together, and not just make a conclusion directly, but, you know, you have to be also, I guess, kind of a person who is a little bit like that already, who is already a little bit more looking at both sides of it. And long before I was looking into things, I was always in my mind also like this. When I had a discussion or talked with someone, I was always, when I was alone, thinking about it, like, hey, did I say something wrong, or was this person right? So I already had this, I guess. So I don't know, I guess some people don't have it so fully to think in that that kind of way.
Yeah, what I noticed is, during August, so it's a while ago now, but I was having conversations with people on Facebook and they were just assuming that I was diseased without ever really asking me any questions or finding out what I thought or anything, simply because I said I would throw the mask away when it was legal to throw the mask away. I would throw the mask away. Immediately 100 people made the assumption that I was diseased and I should be locked up. It just got to the point where I was hurling abuse at people because I couldn't be doing with it, and I just stopped being on Facebook for a month. It was driving me nuts, man. And I got sick. Yeah. That's the thing. I got sick because I started thinking, well, are they right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I got sick for a couple of weeks. So it wasn't me that was sick. It was their assumption that I was sick that was causing the sickness.
Yeah, I guess that's absolutely true. I mean, it means just the pressure of it and the negative energy they send out, and that can really affect you. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
and that's also. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, it gave me an insight that I wouldn't have otherwise had. So I'm kind of grateful for the experience, but it wasn't a pleasant experience.
No, of course, but that's usually the thing that makes people wake up. It's the unpleasant experiences, but it's, yeah, it does. It's good that you came out of it at least. And I'm also finding out this level now, how important it is to be balanced within yourself, but also to the power of words, the powers of expression towards others. And I also changed for a big way, for myself at least. Now with other people around me at work, and I try to be, you know, open and try to be also supportive. Also, try to tell people a lot of positive things, and if they're open for it. And I think I cannot do it with everyone, but I feel the ones that need to hear it, they will hear it. So that's a good thing. But it is not yet extremely, it is polarized. But I mean, I know at work we don't discuss these topics, so generally. It's all right.
No, it got me into trouble at work, so I had to stop. Right at the beginning of the lockdown last year, one of the women at work was insisting that all the bars needed to be closed and everybody needed to be locked in their homes, and I just resisted that verbally, but it got me into trouble, so I had to stop.
Yeah, if you have to, I think I had one colleague. She was pro vaccine, and she took it, and said directly as it came out, I took it, and I said, well, I will never take it, never. And why? And you are then the problem. I said, why? I mean, and it went on for a while. I was discussing with her, and I said, it's not even safe. Yeah, it's safe. It's safe. How do you know? It's not safe anyway. And then she said, well, tomorrow we talk a little more about it. I said, no, I don't want to talk about this because there's much more interesting topics to talk about. Why am I going to waste our energy with this? We're not going to agree anyway. And then the next time, so I didn't talk to her about that anymore. So there's really no point. I don't want to fight. I just want to, you know, have a peaceful life for everyone. It's not that I'm trying to argue against, well, I don't want to argue against them, but we got to stay sane in some way. That's what I feel.
All I was arguing for was the right to have a beer. That's all I was doing, which I've always had since I was 18 years old. I've had the right to have a beer when I want to have a beer, and to not have a beer when I don't want to have a beer, and somebody was trying to take that away from me. So,
yeah, I always thought that would be the thing that would trigger the British, because they are like, it's not that the Dutch are not drinkers, but in England there was just a little bit more. you would think that would shake them up. If you cannot go to the pub, you would think, come on. That's such a part of the whole, of a lot of the culture there, you know. It's not only, of course, that would be a bit degrading to say that, but yeah. It is at least a pub is a cool thing. It's not just for drinking. It's a social thing mostly, actually.
Yeah, it's very much a social thing. A lot of the people that are in the bar are living on their own or isolated from their families or whatever. It was a really hard thing for a lot of people. Being locked up in the house on your own is a tough thing to get through if you're isolated from your family. And if your family's in the pub, if the people in the pub become your support network, then somebody taking that away, that's a serious thing. And people weren't taking it seriously at all. They were just going, oh, it's just a pub. It's a bunch of alcoholics. It's not just a bunch of alcoholics. It's a social support network.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. It's for all purposes. You can go there if you're happy. You can go there when you're sad. You can go there when you want to have a party. It's much more than just getting drunk. You know, I never get drunk actually. I drink, but I hate being drunk. I don't do that. And I love pubs generally or bars generally because either to watch football, that you get that nice energy together, or to have a good talk with someone. But And you can see also we have observed this for a long time with old people, for instance, who didn't see their family, who were alone. You know how killing this is. And then even if you're younger, it's the same thing. And here it was never that extreme. Even when we were in lockdown, you could still, during the day, you could still do quite a lot of things, even though a lot of shops were closed, but they weren't bothering you. So it was quite mild in a way. But that was already heavy enough for me to be at home before 9. It's like, what is this, man? It is completely crazy. But they didn't check so strictly, so a lot of people were still going out anyway. But I think if it comes again, it will be harder, of course. They always do one step more the next time.
I don't think it'll work. I don't think they'll be able to do the same thing that they've just done. Even on their own logic, they can't do it because in theory, the pressure on the National Health Service is going to be less because everybody's been like 80% of people have been vaccinated. So how can you then say there's pressure on the NHS? You're saying, right, there's pressure on the NHS, everybody's been vaccinated. How can you then say that the vaccine's working?
Yeah, exactly. They're not. I think they just twisted again. Like, oh, it wasn't working like we were. I feel like they can get away with that kind of excuse. But I don't know for how long. But I feel they care. But on the other hand, the main question is this. What about the economy? How can you lock a place down? I mean, how does the money keep flowing then? I don't understand this. This must be the first thing you think about. But at least I was when they heard the first time they were proposing lockdowns. I think, well, how are you going to survive as an economy then? I mean, it's like a business. If you close your business for a month, look how much money you're losing. And how can you survive if you don't have a huge reserve? And, you know, these governments have some reserves, but it's not their money, you know. So, yeah. I don't know. That should be the first question, right? How are you going to survive economically in your economy?
Yeah, well, we'll be paying for it for the next 30 years is how it works, because it's all borrowed money.
Yeah, of course, the European Central Bank is pumping in all these injections. Of course, you're going to pay it back, but you have to pay back drastically then also. The prices will get very high, I suppose, for anything, for living expenses. That's also a thing. But, I mean, any moment, common sense, just take disease out of it. Like, an economy closing, and not just once, but twice, and three times, and four times, and forever in lockdowns. And then they're talking about environmental lockdowns. And, yeah, I mean, of course, then this whole digital system will make sense. If this is finally played out, this money system based on the coins and paper, they can move on with the digital stuff. I think that will also tie in.
Yeah, there's a little bit of that going on. There's not that many places that are not taking cash. They were for a while because it was allegedly dangerous to take cash. And a lot of people stopped. But now I can use my cash again.
Yeah, I had to... When in lockdown here, I was once buying something in a shop, and one woman, she was also, I gave her some money, some coins, and she was very carefully looking at it, and you know, then finally she carefully took the money and put it away quickly, like it was completely dangerous to touch money. I was like, come on, really? It's just a couple of coins. I think, how far are people, manipulated with this stuff in their brains? Like, you know, a little. I'm even going the other way now. Like, I was also, all before all this, I was not extremely afraid of bacteria or these kind of things. I always wash my hands, and I still do. But and became a little bit less scary. I think it's a little bit good for the immune system to get sometimes a little bit challenging your body a bit with, if something falls on the floor for some, like an apple falls on the floor for 5 seconds or something, you pick it up and you just eat it again. Instead of, I used to always throw it away quickly, but now I'm starting to rethink a little bit, like, maybe it's not so bad to get a little bit of, and just a little bit of it into whatever it is on, into your body that makes you stronger. Up to a certain level, of course.
Yeah, 60% of your body's bacteria anyway. So there's more bacteria that are you. You're more bacteria than you are you. So
yeah.
What's a little bit of bacteria going to do when you're 60% bacteria to begin with?
Yeah, exactly. So that's what I'm also learning. And I think I heard once, was this young doctor, female doctor in the Netherlands. She's really also in the forefront from the beginning, fighting against all this. And I think she mentioned that in the ocean or something, there's also hundreds of bacteria if you go swimming, and viruses in the sea. And you usually come out refreshed. You not come out sick when you go into the sea to swim.
Yeah, but it's what's called virus protein, basically long strands of protein floating around everywhere, always has been. And I'm not sure about the virus disease theory anymore. I've been listening to a lot of stuff on BitChute, so my brain questions everything now.
Me too.
I have to ration BitChute, otherwise I would go insane.
But that's a good point, and also interesting that these things are never challenged again. And I think, I don't know, it was maybe also John Peace I was looking at, where he was talking also about science, and he has friends with scientists, and he was explaining how long it takes to break the status quo, also in science, where they keep accepting the old norms instead of, proceeding on. And that's sad that it takes so long. We could have been in such a better place if they would be a little bit more open.
Yeah, I think science is such a conservative place. Unless you can, prove something 60 times, they don't even accept the possibility. It has to, because it has to be replicated by half a dozen other people before it even gets acknowledged as existing.
Yeah. I mean, I also understand some of it. You've been in this for years and you've been studying it and you got your little title and your money and all that is also involved, the prestige question of it. And of course, I understand that a little bit. But, it's not, we should get rid of that. That's only serving your own ego. There's no real benefit in it. We should be looking at the health, the health which... I don't think we should be sick. There's actually no reason why a human being should be sick. We got used to it, but,
I agree with that. I think the part of the problem is a belief system that says you will get sick at some point.
Yeah, it's also...
We've all bought into that particular belief system that we have, that it's like you look around, and I look around in Newcastle and I see people who are going backwards and forwards to the doctors constantly, or in and out of hospital constantly, and I'm not buying into any of it. So I have to just go into denial and say that's not who I am.
Yeah, me too. I never like actually go to the doctors. I never feel really that they really know what's going on most of the time. They also have to sort of guess a little bit in the terms of what you are telling them. So if you tell something completely different, it would be fun just to go for an experiment to tell them something you don't have and let them see what they tell, what you think you have. I mean, there's so much power in the mind and in the human capabilities that we have. And it is, of course, another mind trick to tell people, convince people that you can get sick and that you are... you will be sick at some point, and of course, there's this mental. The stress will eventually make you sick too. But now, this interesting. There's so much people that have discovered ways to be healthy, and that we should be healthy, and that you can indeed be influencing your own self. And that's so fascinating, I think. That's something that I should be pushed much more to the foreground, should be taught in schools, like, hey, you don't have to be sick, you know. These tools for yourself to stay healthy.
Yeah. Yeah, and a lot of the thing with doctors is you'll go in, you tell them what's wrong with you, and then they sit and think about it for 5 minutes, and they give you the Latin equivalent of what you've just said, and that becomes your diagnosis. So really, why did you need the doctor in the first place? All they've done is translated into Latin. That's all they've done.
Yeah, but that also takes a new level of seeing things, and it's all again coming back to perception. You know, once you see this, what is this? Why it's like, yeah, we've been put under a spell, and in so many ways. Sometimes I smoke a good joint and listen to music, and I hear the music, of course, much more beautiful. But you can also hear this kind of like, sometimes I pick up these like satanistic tunes in it, like, oh, this is actually quite dark. I never heard this before. And a lot of popular music has that as well. Like, you listen to, I was listening to Nirvana once when I was high, and I thought, whoa, this sounds pretty satanistic, some of it, you know. And also, the first time I took some good THC oil, I felt like, whoa, also here in the Netherlands, it feels like it's in a, it's like a huge cloud of this darkness over the country. You can sense it almost, like, oh, this is scary, man, this dark, this dark energy that's around in so many things. Have you ever felt this?
Now and again, I feel a bit oppressed, but mostly I'm all right. But I'm in denial a lot of the time. I just don't participate. So I'm basically just sitting around. I was doing a lot of reading over the summer, so I was reading novels, and that's just what kept me going during lockdown. But mostly I don't go near the town centre, so I don't see anything that's oppressive. And most of the music I listen to is all blues, or I've started listening to soul as well, so it's more kind of uplifting stuff. I'm less on the heavy metal now than I was.
Yeah, that's true. Some of it, that music was a little bit, they already came from an oppressive background, I guess, where a lot of that blues came from, and there's still a lot of good music out there, of course, but I mean in the commercial pop music and rock music and also rap nowadays, of course, there's a lot of negative undertones, and it sounds actually it's always puzzling me. I think, why was it possible, because these artists, recording artists, a lot of them are really good, but I wonder how all these sort of dark tunes were put into the music. Maybe it's the sound engineers who are involved. I don't know. It's just a theory of mine. But
a lot of it's to do with the drugs they're taking.
Ah, that could also be a part. Yeah.
You can hear in the '60s it was all about speed and LSD, and in the '70s it was more about heroin and cocaine.
Yeah.
So a lot of it is kind of the background social things. So obviously the '60s was much more optimistic than the early '70s. The early '70s we had OPEC meetings every 6 months, and the price of oil was going up. At one point there was 27% inflation that I remember. So it was all a bit kind of, everything was up in the air, and there was industrial strikes going on and unrest and all that. And it's kind of reflected in the music a little bit. I think it just gets picked up subconsciously.
Yeah, but musically, especially from England, the '70s were great with all these people coming up, David Bowie and then Queen and all these other guys and T-Rex and I don't know what, all these great artists that came up in the '70s, actually. So, I don't know. And they were not shy from drugs.
Yeah, the early '70s was class. I was quite young, but I was into all that kind of stuff. I was a bit young for Bowie, but I was into kind of Slade and The Sweet and Susie Quattro. And I was about seven or eight years old. So I just bought into everything that was on top of the pops, basically.
Yeah, and if you think about that, also that the whole industry has completely changed. I mean, in the early 90s, I could still watch the top 40, you know, at the top 40 with the Who's number one, and it was always great to watch on Friday. And what artist is now in the top 10? And that completely disappeared. It doesn't exist anymore. And even buying, going out to buy a CD, or nowadays records are coming back, or I made a comeback the last 10 years. But it's the way you listen music, perceive music, and that whole industry has changed. It's not fun anymore.
Yeah, I haven't bought CDs in years. I occasionally will buy an album online, but I don't like MP3s. I think there was a flip over in the very early 80s from like when we went from analog to digital that wasn't particularly healthy. And I knew that at the time when I was 15. So if I can know it as a 15-year-old, why can't everybody else see it? That's what puzzles me.
Yeah. So what do you think is the problem with it, with the when they change that?
Well, it's moving from analog, which is a it's got subtleties in it. It's got like there's more than just two possibilities into binary, which is just two possibilities. You lose all the subtlety in between. And I think the world has kind of lost all the subtlety in between the two extremes. And it was that psychological flip from analog to digital in the very early 80s. So I blame Dire Straits, Sultans of Swing, and whatever that other album was that went Love Over Gold or whatever it was that went multi-platinum and brought in CDs, because it's a thing that affects people on a subconscious level. I noticed the shift. Obviously, I'm into the quality of the music improved, the sound quality improved, but there was a loss of something as well.
Yeah, I never really thought about it. I bought maybe a year, 2 years ago, I bought a, my brother has a record player, so I bought a record, the Beatles, what album was it? I can't remember the album, but it was also analog. And I thought, okay, it was more expensive, so let's try this. And the sound is amazing, the quality is true. So I'm gonna see if I can find more of this old stuff. If I can find the analog versions on it, maybe on YouTube I can find something to hear the difference.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it used to be you could probably only play the album half a dozen times before it would have a scratch on it. But while it was happening, I mean, in the early 70s, we had quadraphonic sound, which was a big thing. So everything was kind of immersive. So it was analog music plus quadraphonic sound, and now we've got MP3s on a phone. And the difference is huge. In my world, I want to go back to quadraphonic sound. I think quadraphonic sound was amazing.
I don't even know what that is. What is that actually?
There's four speakers, in one in each corner of the room. And you sit in the middle of the room, so you've got different parts of the music coming in from different angles.
All right. What they try to do with the surround system, basically,
Yeah,
or what's that?
the equivalent of surround sound, yeah.
Oh, that must be amazing. If the recording is done well, I mean, I had the experience when I was high, listening to my stereo and then feeling the music coming through me also. But it was just because my brain was infected by THE. But I was like, whoa, the music, I felt the guitars and everything going right through me. And it was just two boxes in front of me, nothing behind me yet. So. But it also depends, I think, a little bit on how the thing is produced, the records and the sounds they've produced on his records. And I mean, especially I notice this with Queen a lot when I listen, the you suddenly hear all those voices coming from all sides, and the guitars coming through, and the bass is going up and down in the somewhere in the background. It's like, I mean, that was, I don't know what those sound engineers did, but that's really I'm not sure if it's good, but I want to hear it. Maybe I can hear it in analog or other ways.
Yeah, well, they used to multi-track 100 different vocal tracks or whatever. They were, you just literally would like do harmonies with themselves 100 times and then mix it all down. It's wonderful, wonderful stuff. But again, that's early 70s. It's the early 70s way of doing things.
Yeah, it was. I mean, John Lennon also has some great records where he has a lot of great music going in the back and moving around. I always loved that.
Yeah, I miss all of that sort of stuff. I mean, I'm 55 now. I don't go to gigs unless they're just in a bar, but I used to go to gigs all the time. I mean, twice a week I would be, when I was a student, I would go to 2 or 3 gigs a week, and I carried that on till I was about 32, 33 years old. So I had 15 years of literally going to gigs twice a week.
Ah, that's nice. Who did you see? All the big names?
Well, it tended to be, when I was a student, it was like, I want to see people like Frankie Goes to Hollywood, and I was going Frankie Goes to Hollywood one day, and then Ozzy Osbourne the next, in a couple of days after that, you know what I mean? So it was all Dead or Alive, the Communards, Whitesnake, Iron Maiden. I saw all of these people at Newcastle City Hall, which was the main kind of venue at the time. And then there was a smaller place. There was a musicians' collective in Newcastle at the time called the Riverside, which was I went to see more industrial German kind of avant-garde metal, but not metal. It's like metal bashing. So people with sheets of metal on the stage and hitting them with hammers and stuff. Cabaret Voltaire and Eist und Neubauten and Exmal Deutschland and bands like this that were all kind of avant-garde German, kind of probably proto-fascist, but I wasn't really into the politics of it. I was just interested in what they were doing musically.
Mm-hmm.
Test Department as well, I saw. So there was all sorts of experimental stuff going on in that smaller place.
Yeah, that's beautiful. When human creativity gets some space, you can see some beautiful things. And I was too young, but I guess in the 70s and also the 80s, there must have been a lot of great things to see and to be able to do as an artist. Or so. You don't have the abilities you have now with all the way you can do the marketing yourself, going out and promote yourself. You have more control over that, but still there must have been a huge wave of creativity and options in those decades.
Yeah, there was a lot of bands came out of Newcastle as a result of the Riverside, or a combination of the Riverside was happening, plus there was a TV show that was being done out, a music TV show that was being done out in Newcastle as well. So there was a lot of international artists coming in for that. So it became kind of a hub of music and creativity and all that sort of stuff. I was a bit young. I was 17, 18 year old when it was really happening, but I know some of the people now that were involved in that scene, so it still kind of has there's harmonics of it, there's waves of it still happening.
What's going on?
Kind of in the background in TV production, even 40 years on.
Yeah, I mean, but you also had there St. James's Park. You ever went there for a concert?
Yes, St. James's is literally about 10 minutes walk from where I live.
Oh yeah, you mentioned it, yeah.
Yeah, you can hear the crowd on a Saturday afternoon. If it's a good game, you can hear the crowd. I know exactly what the score is by the amount of cheering that's going on.
I had an aunt. She also used to live close to a football stadium, so I know the experience.
it's when I was in London, I lived by Tottenham Hotspur's ground. So you have to be aware of the crowds coming in. So I kind of have to know when there's a home game happening, just so I know when I can go out and do my shopping. Because there's so many people on the street just before the game, it's impossible to do any shopping.
Yeah, but it's interesting to talk about this this whole music scene, though. Do you think that with this whole like recording artists, this whole the hit charts and all that, that is beautiful. But does it really? There seem to be a lot of people who got very rich of it. A lot of artists were stolen from. A lot of bands never really got rich, or it took a long time before they finally saw the real money coming in. It's also a very strange industry, and I think a lot of people to survive that industry, it's also not easy, and especially in England with the press hunting you all the time if you're a celebrity, and in the States too, actually. It's made very glamorous and very beautiful, and of course you get rich and famous, but it seems more like a very dark tool, actually, if you look really behind the scenes. With all the money and all the glamorization of it, it's actually a pretty it's not a very I played George Harrison clip the last time on the show, and he also mentioned this it's nice the money, but it's a lot of pressure, and it's not actually very healthy, this kind of lifestyle.
Yeah, well, a lot of it's just for show, really. A lot of it is, it's like you're under contract to produce an album. Like, particularly in the early 70s, people were doing two albums a year. So it's like you'd tour and then make an album in 10 days and then off on tour again.
Yeah, true. I mean, I read this also in the books of Queen. I think they did an album in 2 weeks, and then later, because now it's like 9 months or a year, they're busy working on a record. But then they did it in 2 weeks. I said, whoa, and it was great music. And how did they do it so fast?
Yeah, it's a different way of recording. I mean, I've been listening to Iron Maiden documentaries. There's a lot of material of Iron Maiden in the studio, and they've kind of changed the way they write and changed the way they record over the years. But I
Yeah,
think
but you would have
these
with
days they do one song at a time rather than writing an album. They just do concentrate on one song until it's right. And then
yeah,
move
I think
on to
that
the
is
next one.
yeah, okay, yeah, but they probably became too leisurely then, I suppose, because if you could do it in 2 weeks before, why would you want to take 9 months now for I mean, to take a little bit away the pressure perhaps, but the even better than recording techniques, the way you record is easier and you take longer. That doesn't make much sense, actually, in a way. Like, how is this possible when you had the old way of course, that took longer to record with how they do it in the 70s and early in the 80s with cutting, and you had to really cut the tape literally. And now you can just do it on a computer. And so it's strange in a way why it would take longer.
Yeah, it's a bit of a puzzle.
I never really liked when the first time I went to a concert and it was all digital. I didn't feel good about it. Like, it was too metallic, the sound, too. Like, when you used to go before, at least when they put on the big boxes, you could really feel the bass, and you could feel everything. And it wasn't perfectly clear. You could not always hear every instrument very well, but it felt more natural. And soon as they started to put everything digital, it was crystal clear, but it was almost too clear. Like, this is not how music's supposed to sound when you go to a concert. And did you ever have this?
Yeah, well, that again, it's the difference between analog and digital. It feels different. There's more resonance in your body with analog, much more resonance in your body.
Yeah, and I guess there's a lot of things you can find also on the internet. You can find the analog versions again, I suppose. I haven't looked for it, but I'm pretty sure it must be up there.
They'll be there somewhere, but I'm wondering if there would be a demand from people for an analog studio again. like really old school, like a tape studio based on tape.
Yeah, exactly. I think the Foo Fighters did it once. They actually went back to record on tape again with one album. I'm not sure if they keep doing it, but they, of course, have their own record company and they have the means to do so. So they actually did it.
All right. So, yeah, it has been done.
Yeah.
Cool.
So it is possible.
All right, man. We're coming up to the hour mark. So I said about an hour.
Yeah, sure.
So I think we probably ought to wrap up about now. I've got to jump in the bath and get organised. So, and you, I'm guessing, are you at work today or you've got a day off?
No, they've got today and tomorrow off. And then my new work week will start because I talked with them. I talked with the owners. I said, look, I got a little raise and they will give me some more later. But I said, yeah, but I want to work 4 days, not five. And it was not possible. Yeah, to keep it short, I get a new schedule this week from 11 till 6, so I will be able in the evening to spend more time on Podbean again and other things that I want to do. So yeah, I will probably be a little bit more available to listen to shows again and participate.
All right, cool. Well, I'm still haven't got a regular time. Even now, I still haven't got a regular time. I just jump on when I'm in the right mood.
No, but it's also good. I mean, for me also, I mean, I try to. I see a lot of times people do shows, and when I can, and now I think with a little bit more better working times, I've been able to join in more again. And, yeah, like I said to South Osman last time, I was really trying to see if we can all get together and, like, do our own programs. Everyone does some program at a certain time, and we can all be joining into sort of one station or at least one place where we can all get together and do our shows.
Yeah, well, there's some possibilities. I keep coming up with ideas for bits and pieces. There's like a radio station online doesn't cost very much at all. It's just a matter of like you wouldn't be able to record it. The material, you'd have to find another way to record the material. Well, you can do it for $10 or whatever.
Yeah, I was looking at some interesting websites there was a place where they would create a website, a radio hosting website for you, and you could do blogs on it and even videos, and it was like $60 a year or something. I thought, might be interesting, but I haven't looked at it enough much. So, but there is some options out there, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we could. We just carry on the conversation on Telegram. I'll post the links that I find. You post what you find, and we'll work it out as we go along.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I'm all for that.
All right, man. That's cool. All right, I'm gonna wrap this up now because I definitely need to get organized. Right, yeah. I'll catch you later.
All right, man. I'll talk to you later.
All right. Bye now.
Bye bye.